So last night, we'll touch on it briefly here and we'll get back into it in greater depth. It was a belting right from the word go. And the defence of the Brisbane Lions did not allow the Geelong match winners to get anywhere near it. They got field position. They got inside 50. But Harris Andrews took out Jeremy Cameron. Adams played a magnificent game on Hawkins. Mm. Like, his intercept marking was superb. And Stasevich did what Stasevich's doing all year, and that is went to Rowan and chopped him out. So the midfield, led by Zorko, led by Jared Lyons, Lachie Neale was slow, hurt his shoulder early. They were on top. Joel Selwood, this is what happens. And this is why you got your eggs in your basket here with the Cats. So they still rely on Selwood. He had no impact. They rely heavily on Hawkins and Dangerfield. Dangerfield was okay. Stewart played on Cameron, which was strange. It was a strange matchup to have Tom Stewart go to Cameron after the game that he played, and Cameron ran him ragged. Joe Danaher kicked four. So, yeah, it was. I think it was an instructive night in lots of ways. And the Cats looked flat, but I don't think that's fair to the Brisbane Lions.
Yeah, maybe give the Brisbane Lions some credit for what they
did.
No,
all credit to them.
Their forward line is a very difficult forward line to match up against, isn't it? You've got McCarthy, who is a very good player. And then you've got two big, tall forwards who are really mobile. Both those blokes get up the ground. They drag the defence around, which is exactly what the defence doesn't want, to be taken
happy
to places
have
all over
in
the ground.
Out of the goal square because they had the Stewart matchup.
Well, he's happy for that too. That's where he wanted to play. Yep. That's where he likes to have a little bit of room and a little bit of space to operate in. Yep. And then they've got McStay, who's a good marking player too. So that's a really difficult. And then their mids were good. You know, we talked about this with Louis the other day about, you know, who was going to play what type of football, what brand of football. Ball, whether they're going to be careful with the ball, that type of thing. I think they signalled their intention very early in the game, the Brisbane Lions, when they broke off halfback. Zorko was, I thought he was just absolutely fantastic in that first quarter, breaking off halfback. Had one thing in mind, and that was to move the ball on as quickly as they possibly could, just to unsettle the Geelong defence. And that's the way that it played out all night.
Yeah, no, you sent me that message, and you spot on. The speed on the ball from him, like just to turn and go. Like, turn and go.
That's what he did.
Happens.
He just was turning, but he kicked the ball so well too. Like, his kicks from half backward, darts that hit the target.
Speaking of kicking, Daniel Rich's left foot is it should be insured. No, I'm not going down the hyperbole. I'm not going to say it's the greatest left foot in the history of footy. But
disappointed.
What it did, it helped them. Like, they scored on turnover huge last night, but there was a couple of pieces of play that – where you see Geelong are set up as they do defensively, but his kick, he took the risky kick through the middle of the ground, who then turned and went over the top of the Geelong setup, the defensive setup. It makes such a difference. So he would be the one you'd go after. It was interesting that Birchall, I don't know what the situation with Birchall, whether he was injured or whether it was a late out, but they brought Payne in, probably, I mean, a little concerned. I don't know whether Birch is in their best team. They looked to cover the ground better when he wasn't there. Robertson, I thought, was great. Robertson?
Yeah, Devin Robertson.
Went to Selwood.
Yep.
And he was fantastic. And, yes, I was just about to get to this, Richard. The age-old problem with the Geelong Footy Club, or question mark about the Geelong Footy Club, raised its head again last night because Oscar McInerney just destroyed them. Destroyed them in the ruck. Destroyed them around the ground. Sava Radaglia, I don't know whether he's a ruckman, Tim.
Last week he looked okay. The week before, ground level ball, but you're quite right. He can't get his hand onto the ball first against those big monster ruckmen. And how telling, we don't know the answer to this question yet, but how telling that might be in the last month of footy.
Well, I mean, they've dealt with it so well for a long period of time. They keep putting themselves in contention, but they haven't won. So is that the little missing link, that they haven't got a dominant? And sure, we're about to speak to Sean Darcy, who I know they would have loved to have got their hands on.
That's right. But they've gone after – look at all the guys they've gone after.
Yeah, they haven't got it.
During that period of time, and they haven't been able to get themselves a ruckman.
Now we can talk about get back to the game if you want, if that's what you want to do. Yep. Or as Craig wants to do, he does want to talk about last night. How are you, Craig?
Just about the umpiring last night. Great game of football, but gee, he was over-umpired, especially in that second quarter.
I agree with you.
The other one I wanted to ask, when the Geelong player kicked the ball deliberately through the point in the second quarter, why did the umpire ask the goal umpire if it was touched?
Yeah, I think he got confused.
Yes.
I think he just got, because we haven't seen that for a long time, Craig. I thought it was over-umpired. I think at one stage one of the boys on the commentary said there was 37 free kicks have been given, and the average for a game is around 39 or something. It was there halfway through the second quarter.
There was a lot of stuff going on, though,
there
last
was.
Night.
I mean, you got to, yeah, I understand that, but I just thought maybe that was just the nature of the game.
There was, thanks for your call. It didn't spill over, and football doesn't spill over that often now, but there's a real edge between these two teams, isn't there? Like there's there's the fabricated stuff that you see from time to time and a bit of push and shove, but there's this underlying dislike of these teams between each other that makes for a great contest.
There was a good old fashioned throwback incident last night, a throwback to the past.
Are you talking about the Stewart incident?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Stewart gets baited. In the end,
he lost it.
He lost it. Old-fashioned lost his cool and gave away a 50-metre penalty. Thankfully for them, it didn't end up in a goal. It didn't have any impact in the end. But
he went bananas.
He went nuts. He flung Charlie Cameron. Charlie Cameron got the 50. Then Charlie stopped baiting him. And then, the old-fashioned part about it, get him off, straight to the bench. And then there was a shot of him on the bench, and he just hung his head like he just thought, yep. I've just been sucked, good old-fashioned sucked in here. And he hung his head in, not in disgrace, but he was disappointed with himself.
Oh, back in the day, you used to see that a lot, didn't you?
Oh, all the time. Get baited.
Get him off!
And the bloke whacks him. Get him off. Taking your calls here on, all things footy last night. There's a couple of you who are going very, very close to the line about getting an all-time suspension. 649, our man John is loved in here, so you mightn't enjoy it on that occasion, but you need to be very, very careful. Brett is in Footscray. G'day, Brett.
Yeah, guys. Listen, I'm a bit old school. I don't really like this kicking around the corner, et cetera. And I think one of the biggest lessons Brisbane can take out of last night and Joe Danaher is at halftime when the siren went and he had the umpire stand behind him and he was in his sour spot 35 metres out. He had to run in to take the kick directly straight.
Mm.
So there was no swinging around. There was nothing that or otherwise was half time. And because he had to run in straight, he kicked the ball dead straight in his worst area of goal kicking.
He did kick well last night, Joey. I'm always worried about Joey's kicking and think that I'm fearful that maybe one day it's going to cost them big, big time. But he kicked well last night, no question about it. So maybe he might, but I think that's a really good point from Brett. He had no other choice. He could come off his line a little bit to the right as long as he ended up kicking over the head of the player. And he kicked, slapped it.
Yeah, he did. That's a good point, Brett. He did actually kick around the corner a couple of times last night as well. So yeah. I don't know whether he's actually got a set routine in his mind at the moment. Do you think he has?
No.
It's unusual, though, isn't it, that somebody doesn't have a set routine?
It's a bit of a raffle, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, but he was feeling it last night. Hey, Wispy, Jason Bennett, is he in line for more primetime action on Channel 7? Use your power and give the people what they want. That's from Fletch in Northcote. Well, there's a lot of fans out there, Jason Bennett.
Will you be going
a lot of fans
into Lewis's office today and saying, listen, Jason Bennett needs more time?
Yep, already done that, Gary.
Have you?
Already done that.
Oh, so you're the champion of Jason Bennett. Good on you. Russell's in Pakenham. G'day, Russ.
Good morning, boys. Love Johnny. He's a crack up. I think you need to get him in there one time. But what I want to talk about, boys, is Tony Cochran's comment to Nick Riewoldt. Mate, if I was Nick Riewoldt sitting there, I would have said, Tony, how many finals have you played? And how many grand finals have you played? One? None, buddy. So worry about your own backyard, your rabble of a club, and get that right, and don't worry about other people's clubs.
Strong from you, Russell. Did he go into his shell after that or not?
No.
Johnny thought he did.
No, I know he did. It was a respectful exchange. He took Tony Cochran to task over something he said about Brett Godfrey, who Nick had been working with on the paper for Tassie down there. So he stood his ground respectfully, and Tony said, no, I respect your opinion, but I'm allowed to have mine. And
did he look flat post-show?
No, I didn't think so.
Okay.
Darren's in Epping. G'day, Dazzler.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, thank you.
All credit to Brisbane, they outplayed Geelong all night. But, Joe, well, you were talking about Joe Danaher's kicking before. Well, he got a fair opportunity to do it because the umpires kept giving him kicks. And how many times did he stage for free kicks last night?
We spoke about this morning, Dazzler. I didn't like it. I put my hand up as someone who did it himself, so I include myself in this. It's a form of cheating. It's like there was no contact, just flopped himself forward. Lockie Henderson's look summed it up. He went back and kicked the goal. A minute later, he took a bit of a bump and went to ground and held his head. And I thought, geez, he's in all sorts of trouble. Then in the corner of the screen, you just saw him look up. And then he jumped up and ran and kicked a goal. So you don't need to do that. Joe doesn't need to do that.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't need to.
That was super impressive last night, the Brisbane Lions. Is there a gap in their game somewhere? Is there one thing that you would be at all concerned about with them
only thing
for the last month of footy?
Yeah, well, I think all year they've been pretty faultless. But the game when Melbourne beat them in that second half, I thought the pace was going to be an issue for them. I just thought that maybe Birchall and Rich in the back half was going to have a bit of a vulnerability. Now, Birchall didn't play, as I said, for whatever reason. They looked to cover the ground much better last night. And then maybe Melbourne's second half, they just moved it better and they made them look slow. But that could be clutching at straws a bit, Wiss, but that would be the only thing, I reckon.
Lindsay's in Somerville. Good morning, Lindsay.
Morning, Gaz and Tim. Just going into Keyser for a bit of training, boys. So
nice.
I can recommend them highly.
Yes. Good work.
But as a Brisbane supporter, mate, I think we underestimate how shrewd, you know, little Chris Fagan is. He's got a reputation as, you know, a great, you know, people person, all the rest of it. But I looked at that match last night, mate. We didn't have that much of the ball. Our stars didn't really, a lot of stars didn't go crazy like McCluggage. There was five or six players that didn't even touch it. And yet that game style just decimated Geelong. And I think Fagan's expertise in game plan is a bit underestimated because he comes across as, you know, a friendly granddad.
The ball movement was excellent last night, Lindsay. I think he commented on that at half time when he was talking to Hodgie too about how happy he was with their ball movement in the first half. But it wasn't just that they were running the ball. It was actually they were kicking the ball and kicking it long, and they seemed to have all these zones around the ground that were then movement zones for them in terms of they had players that were already ahead of the play creating that space for each other. So they were as impressive as could be, particularly in that first half when they were moving the ball. And Geelong just didn't seem to have an answer to it.
No, they were good. This text here says the Lions' biggest gap is Darcy Gardner. They need him back as soon as possible. I know they love him, but Marcus Adams' job on
Tom
Hawkins was as good as anyone's played him.
Mm.
So, and Marcus Adams got cut up badly. Who'd they play? Oh, my memory's God, I got a shock of memory. A week or two ago, he got sliced up. Might have been Jack Revolt that got him in the first quarter, and everyone was screaming at Chris Fagan, "You got to move him, you got to move him." And Chris Fagan said, "No, I don't," and left him there. And in the end, he got on top of Jack. So Marcus Adams has done a fantastic job in the past few weeks. I know they would love Darcy Gardner back, but they're getting by at the moment.
They'll be there when the whips are cracking. Jamie's in Darlinghurst. Good morning, Jamie.
Hey, boys. How you doing?
Good, Jamie. Thank you.
Yeah, hey, enjoy your break over the next couple of weeks. You deserve it. Hey, I just reckon last night, so after the Melbourne game, Brisbane lost their legs a bit in the second half, right? Melbourne just got over the top of them. And I reckon that's why Fagan's kept with these kids, Davin Robertson, Kiddian Coleman, that James Madden, I think his name is, the young kid from Ireland.
Yep.
And they were just a bit quick for Geelong last night, a bit young, just a bit quick. I think that's now a template for other teams to beat Geelong.
Could have been. Jamie, I said to Tim when I came in this morning, when the Cats play like that, and they just look flat and off and all that sort of stuff, couldn't get their hands on it, they do. Then you start to worry, don't you? You go, well, gee, they're going to have to win it this year or next.
That was like the Geelong of the first month of the year.
Yeah. So I think Chris got acknowledged that. He said, we're not going to wash it under the carpet. He said, we've got some things to work on, but
do you think
I wouldn't be jumping off them just yet.
Is there a possibility, you know, when a side goes, or two teams go at each other like they did last Friday night, the Bulldogs and Geelong, and then you've got to back up 6 days later. Do you think we underestimate what it actually takes out of the players?
Well, we probably do, but there are teams that manage to get by with it. So it's not as if you can put a definitive line through a team and say, oh, you've played a big game on Thursday, therefore, or on Friday, therefore you'll never be able to back up on Thursday, because some teams have.
Yeah, they have. But that was that game against the Bulldogs a week before, that was a really hard-running physical contest as well.
Yep, I'm sure they can. Hey, just on that Devin Robertson, what a great story he was. So, captain of the West Australian under-18 team, had a magnificent under-18 championship. So the draft comes along and they go, right, on the Thursday night we're doing the top 20 or whatever it was. So top 20 picks, therefore we'll invite the 25 players, we think. And he's one of them. So he's, you know, the draft has him going anywhere from 8 to 14. So he has to sit there through the night at 16, no Devin Robinson, 17, no. 20, they called out, who was it there? 20 was Sam Philp from Carlton. So that's it. So he had to go home, go to bed. Everyone's sort of doing their analysis going, why didn't he go? Why didn't he go? So then he comes back the next day, and from all reports, Brisbane just sat there going, are we going to get him at 22? Because there was another pick first off. Richmond had a pick at 21. They just held in their breath thinking, this is what I'm told. And everyone says,
yep.
One recruiter can say this all the time, but they just sat there holding their breath thinking, how did he get through? They took Thomas Dow, Richmond, and they couldn't spit out the name Devin Robertson quick enough. And
good reason why.
He looked good.
He does. Apparently he's got a massive, massive engine too. So he's built to play the modern game.
It's pointed out that Geelong have done it 2 weeks in a row. They played Port and then the Bulldogs. So fair enough. Maybe that's contributed. But as we said, take nothing away from Brisbane. Rowan's in back of Smash. Go, Rowan.
G'day, Gary. How you going?
Good, thanks.
And Tim? I just want to know how Joe Danaher played yesterday is any different to how Joel Selwood played last week. You know, you say he was cheating. I'd probably more describe it as not playing within the spirit of the game, but just...
Sure.
It just Joel Selwood sort of sucks the umpire in to get,
yeah,
you know, more favourable freeze. I see it the same way. How is it any different?
No, fair. That's a fair call. Cheating is a really strong word. I shouldn't say cheating, but it is. I just say this again before, and no one's jumping down my throat. I did it. I used to do it. I used to try and suck umpires in and try and cheat for free kicks, Wisp. And in the end, it doesn't hold you in good stead. That's all. And it'll catch up. He'll be made to earn it. What do you reckon when they umpire? This is what he's got to think of. They go to the umpire review on Monday, and
yep,
they sit in the room and they go, all right, let's do this game.
Yep.
There's umpire Watson. What were you thinking, Watson, when you saw this?
Yeah.
And they'll replay it slowly. Joe doesn't get touched. He falls forward and Watson gives a free kick and they get a goal.
That's right. The next time they see him fall forward, tumble forward in a pack, they're going to say, okay, well, he fooled us once. What did George Bush say?
Fool me once, fool me once around the back again. Catherine's in Flemington. G'day, Catherine.
Good morning, guys. Enjoy your break. Good luck to the Lions. They owed us one. Not just from round two, but from the prelim last year. So good on them. But I'll just repeat what Scotty said last week. When we win, we're experienced. When we lose, we're old and we get pulled apart. We will be there in September. We'll have another crack. And yes, I was also going to say, you know, the Port game as well was another one that was a little bit tricky for us. So I reckon we've done all right for those 3 weeks.
I think it's so true, Catherine. It is. You watched last night and your mind does go to the fact that you've got 10 30-pluses or 9 30-pluses and they looked off the bit. But when they play well, you go, how good are they and how good a stead is it going to hold them in? So the proof's in the pudding and we won't know until the last day in September.
That's
whether
right.
They all went all in on Higgins and Smith and Cameron and whether it pays off or not. Big weekend of footy, big weekend of basketball, big weekend of soccer on here in Melbourne town. You wouldn't want to be anywhere else. And the Fremantle Dockers are here, Wispy. They wouldn't want to be anywhere else. And were they excited about the re-signings recently and the number one target to be re-signed? It was good to get Tracy redone and a couple of Dick Tracy done and a couple others. They wanted Sean Darcy's signature, no doubt about it. The big ruckman who's from the Western District, who the Geelong Footy Club we saw again last night, haven't been able to, hammer down their rucking spot. They would have been looking at him just going, could we? But no, he's committed to Freo. Since round eight, number six for disposals, number four for contested, this is for ruckman, number five for clearance, hit out to advantage two, score involvement three, pressure's number six. But the best way, you've got to do it in relative terms.
Right.
So relative for his age over the journey, 23-year-old ruckman, highest rated relative 23-year-old ruckman ever, Nick Natanui, 2013.
Right.
Number two, Sean Darcy.
Number two?
Number two.
Where's Brodie Grundy on that
three
list?
Brodie Grundy, 2017-3. Nick Natanui, 2013. Sean Darcy, 2021.
As a 23-year-old?
Yep. He's performing 48% above the expectation for a ruckman at that age in this stage of his career. Anyway, the bottom line is...
Where was Simon Madden at 23?
I don't think they did it back then. He has recommitted. He doesn't do a hell of a lot of media, but he's been very, very kind to jump on the line this morning. Or he has. When he does, we'll talk to him. What do you mean he's not here yet?
It says not ready yet.
All right. Okay.
Sean Darcy, not ready yet. Read the screen.
Sorry about that.
Actually, you've already made news too. It's already online. Former Melbourne great label star, liar, cheat.
Don't wind them up, Tim. Oh, if they do write that article, they better write the context around it. Otherwise,
context. You know that. No. There's no context. It's just a pull-out cheap headline, bit of clickbait. That's how it works. You know this business better than anybody.
All right, let's go to, well, I've did the big build up for Shawnee.
He's not there. Is he not answering?
About 8:06. No.
Well, he's still on Perth time.
They do it a different way, Freo. You've got to wait for them to call us, I think. In fact, he's done it now. He joins us. Did he hear the big build up I gave him? Sean Darcy joins us on the line. Hey, Shawnee.
G'day, Gary. How you going?
Good to talk to you. Did you hear the big pump up I just gave you?
No, I didn't. Sorry, I just got off the phone.
Oh, Shawnee said you're the greatest 23-year-old football the game's ever seen.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Hey, the siding's great, big fella. You've got over there. You're a country Victorian boy. You're school here in Melbourne. You get drafted. You've got to go over to Perth. It's a big, big adjustment. And now you got yourself really well established. You must be thrilled to be able to commit to Freo for a couple more years.
Yeah, I was really excited. They came to my management team and said, are you excited to extend? And I didn't see myself being anywhere else. So I've just bought a house over in Freo and have a really good group of people around me supporting me out in WA. So yeah, it was really, really exciting.
Were you aware of any interest from other clubs, in particular the Cats?
Not really aware. I'm sure I was still in contract until the end of next year. So maybe by the end of there, there might have been some. But what my manager told me was, yeah, Freo were keen to sign you. So I was like, yeah, all right, I'll jump ahead.
Hey, Sean, what is it that you like or love about playing for Fremantle and living over there in the West?
Well, we've got a really good environment at the moment. We have a lot of young blokes who are really close together in the footy club. We spend a lot of time together outside the footy club as well. So it's a really enjoyable footy club to be at. We all want to improve. We all want to get better. We're pushing each other most days to improve out in the track. And then again, when we're relaxing, having fun, we're really competitive as well. So it's really enjoyable, and it's a bit warmer over there than Melbourne. So that's always a positive.
Who drives that environment for you and the players over there?
Oh, there's a range of players. Fifey's one of the best players we've got in the competition, so he's competitive, and same as Dave Mundy's. They don't lose their competition, but the young boys coming through, like Caleb, Andrew, Adam, all them boys, and then the boys I got drafted with Griffin, Lukey and Coxie and Tay, we're all really competitive and really want to see us succeed.
What about in terms of learning the craft of rucking? I mean, you had Aaron Sandlands, I guess, would have been there when you first arrived. What's the biggest change to your game that's seen you now find yourself in amongst the top 3-4 ruckmen in the competition?
Yeah, Aaron's been huge for me. I played with him for the first 3 years of my career, and then he's been my coach ever since. So he's been really good. With my development, probably my fitness around the ground is something that I always am trying to build on, trying to improve. Getting to more contests. The more contests you get, the likelier you're going to win some of them. So just being able to work around the ground and follow up and get to as many contests as possible.
So how hard do you work on that? The actual ruck craft is something I think, unless you play in that position, it's a bit of a foreign, it's like another language for us. But in terms of your fitness stuff, what's the split between working on your ability to get from one end to the other as opposed to the craft work?
Oh, it's probably, they're probably the two biggest ones. It's wrestling some bloke, and then you got to follow up. It's pretty tough, the ruck craft. But, for me, my fitness is always like something that I'm always striving to be. It's every week kind of focus on me, doing extra crossies, doing extra swims, things like that. Just trying to build it to be as good as them, and I'm still working on it these days.
And what about the diet? You used to give it a smashing at the Xavier College boarding house. You used to give that a fair belting. Have you got that under control?
Yeah, that's something that I'm working on as well. My dietitian's been really huge for me. We're always in constant communication about everything, so making sure I'm on top of skinnies and things like that is really important as well.
How often do they run the tape over you during the season for skin folds and things like that?
It's about once a month, so and then if they go high or if they're following a bad trend, it's about once every 2 weeks. So
some blokes can hide.
Once a month, you're very good.
Some blokes manage to hide. I'm not sure you'd be able to hide from this, would you?
Nah, I can't hold me skinny. I'm eating bad. They're going up. Which is...
Hey, how good is it to be in Melbourne and back? I know, as you say, you settled in Perth. You bought your house. You're loving it over there. But to be back here and about to play on the MCG. I know you're playing. Is it at Marvel Stadium against Collingwood? MCG. Yeah, so you're Marvel. Playing at Marvel against the Pies. How good is it to be back in town?
Yeah, this is where footy is, the heart of footy in Melbourne. So it's really good to be back in town. I spent a lot of time growing up here, so I've got a lot of friends and family back here, which is always good to see them. But in footy terms, there's just a little bit of a different vibe in Melbourne compared to other cities. So, it's really good to be back here.
Which part of the country Victoria do you come from?
Cobden, so about just out of Geelong, about an hour and a half out of Geelong.
And were you on the land there?
Yeah, we got about a 300 acre farm. Oh. We farm beef cows.
A mixty or a beef cattle, is it?
Yeah, beef cattle.
Right.
What sort of tractors are you running there, Shawnee? We like our farm talk. We like talking tractors. What sort of tractors you got down there?
I think the old man just bought a John Deere the other year ago, so he's pretty happy with that one.
He must have had a good year.
Doesn't let me get on that one, not yet.
Well,
I've been away for too long.
Well, you've just signed. You got the bag, the big contract. How about forking out a couple of shekels for the old man and buying him another tractor?
You seen how much they cost?
That's just a small one.
The first time your voice has gone high for the whole interview then. Hey, give us the ruckman, rank the three hardest that you've played against.
I played Max Gorn after a PCL 16 week out, so that one was pretty tough. So just the way his ability to cover the ground is unbelievable. He doesn't stop running. He's really fit and he gets to as many contests as possible. Brody's tomorrow, he's just a competitor. He'll compete all day. He won't let you have an inch and he'll just fight and fight. And then Nick Nat, if he's up and going, he'll knee you in the throat and jump all over you. So you've got to be on when them three are on. You've got to be on trying to stop them.
With big Shawnee Darcy, he has just recommitted to the Fremantle Footy Club. The country Victorian boy, he's back in town. He's taking on the Pies tomorrow at Marvel Stadium. The Australian cricket team used to have they used to call them the trendy blokes and then the bogany blokes, you know. Yep. If Nathan Fyfe was the trendy bloke with the trendy haircut and the good gear and the good clothes and all that, would you be in his group or if you weren't, who would be in your group?
I wouldn't be a trendy bloke. I wear things that are most comfortable. Yeah. Not probably stylish. Anything that's comfy, I wear. Yeah. Probably like someone like Mitchy Crowden. He's a bit of a country boy at heart, which is always good.
Yeah. Who's the biggest trendsetter at the joint?
Oh, Michael Fredericks loves his shoes. Liam Henry. They love their clothes. They're always shopping.
Well, you just stay well grounded there, Big Shawnee. Just keep nice and grounded, and be the big country boy is getting the job done. It's been fantastic. Relation to Tim, aren't you? Tim's your uncle, Tim Darcy.
Yeah, Tim's my uncle. Yep.
Has he had an influence? Does he touch base with you every now and then and give you a little straighten up?
Yeah. I hear from him every now and then. He's pretty good with me. Any questions, he sort of answers. But he's a lot on. You'll find your way through the footy. I don't really want to tell you what to do. You'll find it. But if I'm ever need a question or anything, I'll give him a call. And he's always on the phone.
What are you planning?
Real helpful.
Oh, sorry. Just one final. What are you planning to do today? What's on for the rest of the day?
So we've got a few meetings: midfield meeting, and then a team meeting, and then we'll go. Well, we've got training, so a captain's run. So we'll get flush all the stuff out of our legs because we've just jumped off a plane last night. So. And then we've got the afternoon free. I think I might do some physio, and then I might catch up with Mum and Dad if they're up in town.
Little nap? Maybe a little kipper?
Yeah, I'll have a kip for sure.
That's great. Hey, Shawnee, it's great to talk to you. It really is. Our audience, we can see the feedback as we talk, and our audience love hearing it. They think you've got a voice like Kamal. They say, is that soothing?
it went a little bit high when we just started talking tractors. That was it.
Good to talk to you. Enjoy the day tomorrow. It's great for Freo supporters that you've recommitted. So good luck against the Pies tomorrow night.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Well, the voice of football, soccer, football in this country is Simon Hill, SEN's very own. He's host of the Global Game and Saturday night Melbourne City take on Sydney FC. It's at Amy Park just after 5 o'clock on Saturday night. It's a very, very busy sporting weekend for this city. We're proud of our sporting teams and we're very, very hopeful and we're thankful, Simon, as I say good morning to you, that the game's here in Melbourne.
Morning, guys. How are you? Yeah, it's the right decision to have the game in Melbourne. I know it's been tricky for them to get it there, but Melbourne City have earned those hosting rights and looking forward to a great game on Sunday, and it's in the right venue, which is Melbourne.
Yeah, and we've got a crowd coming in as well, so it'll be absolutely sensational. Hand high in the air, which is not our area of expertise. Some would say we don't have one, Simon, but we need you to tell us how this game is going to be played out.
I think it's going to be very tight. It is the two best teams in the competition this season. Melbourne City winning the Premiership, Sydney FC finishing second, just a couple of points behind. During the season, I think Melbourne City have slightly had the edge in the meetings between the two. They've won one, drawn the other. The big question mark, really, for both teams is the absentees, particularly the Socceroos. Sydney FC are without three key defenders, including their goalkeeper, Andrew Redmayne, Brian Grant, Ryan McGowan. So they're having to rejig the defence. Didn't bother them too much in the semi-final against Adelaide, although they had to hang on a bit second half. Melbourne City are missing probably more players through the spine of their team, which is makes things a bit trickier, I think. So Jamie McLaren, obviously the Golden Boot winner, 25 goals. Colin Metcalfe, who's been very, very good in midfield. And Curtis Good, who's been very solid as a left-sided central defender. They're three big misses. But both have shown that they can cope with that in their semi-final wins, that the kids stepped up brilliantly for Melbourne City. Marco Tilio, Stefan Kolakowski scoring the goals against MacArthur in the semi-final. So it's very, very difficult to pick, to be honest. Wouldn't be surprised on Sunday if it goes all the way through to penalties because I think the two teams are very evenly matched. But home advantage, history tells us in grand finals, is a big thing. So I think if anything, I'd be slightly leaning towards Melbourne City to win it, particularly if, as rumoured, two of their more experienced attacking players, Andrew Naboot and Craig Noon, are fit for the weekend. And there's a big doubt over them, but they did train earlier on in the week. So I'd imagine if there's even half a chance that they can play in the grand final, they'll do it.
Hey, Simon, a cautious defensive style of game?
I would have thought so. Not by intent, anyway. Both teams like to go forward. The difficulty is that there's so much at stake because it's, the big showdown, big showpiece occasion, that the game's grand finals tend to be that way. But I don't think it's by design. Melbourne City, certainly in particular, are a very attacking team. Sydney FC maybe a little bit more cautious. They tend to play on the counter, but I don't think it'll be a dull game. I hope not, anyway. But sometimes, as I say, inevitably it becomes that because there's so much at stake.
Were you surprised to read that Muskie off to Japan?
Maybe a little bit, but I think Yokohama F. Marinos obviously have had a very good experience with an Australian coach in the last couple of years. So they want to repeat the experience. And Muskie's a good coach. He didn't have the greatest time at Saint-Troyes in Belgium, but he knows how to coach and he'd be looking for an opportunity like that. And as I say, maybe there's a familiarity about the Australian coach. I'm delighted for him if that's the way it works out. He'd make a good fist of it. I hope so, anyway.
Just back on the final, are you happy to have a playoff for an outright championship winner as opposed to someone, as the Champions League does, just the winner is the team that finishes on top?
Yeah, this is the age-old debate in Australia. Look, I'm happy with the final system at the moment because it is the way of things here in Australia. And I think, the finals bring in a lot of money, or at least in a normal year where we don't have COVID. And I think the supporters like it. I think they're excited by finals. The other thing against the first-past-the-post system, and this is the key one really in our code of football, is that until we have promotion and relegation, you can't really have first past the post, because if you have one dominant team that is, you know, 15, 20 points ahead halfway through the season, the rest of your domestic season, the regular campaign, is completely meaningless for half the league. You can't have that. Now, we need to get to a point where we have promotion and relegation and a second division to bring us into line with the rest of the world. That's our code of football. But we don't have that at the moment. So, you know, that's the major reason why I would say, no, we keep the finals. But there are others as well. And, you know, grand finals are great. Fans love them. Yep. So
we're going to love this one. You need to tell us who's going to win.
I'm going to stick with what I said earlier. I'll say Melbourne City. I think home advantage is important. I think it'll be very tight. As I say, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if Sydney came away with the championship. But Melbourne City have been the best team all season. They won the premiership, and I think they probably deserve to be crowned champions. But we'll see.